The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Ed Tremblay from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the Tar Heel Junior Historian magazine, North Carolina History for Students. Today we'll be reading from Volume 63, Number 2, It's Revolutionary, Choices in Conflict. This is the Spring 2024 edition. The first article is The Harlow Patriots by Sally Causey Bloom, who is an educator at the North Carolina Museum of History. On September 3, 2016, a new chapter of the Sons of the American Revolution, the SAR, was chartered in Harlow, North Carolina. The SAR, a service, social, and heritage group, consists of male descendants of people who supported the Patriot cause during the American Revolution. The unique aspect of this particular SAR chapter is that it's the first majority black unit in the 130-year history of the organization. Most black people in the British colonies at the time of the Revolution, including North Carolina, were enslaved. Still, it is vital to recognize that some black residents and people of color, including American Indians, were and had always been free. During colonial times in North Carolina, enslavers and other people in authority did not always enforce restrictions for people of color. This meant that, at times, for some people of color, it was a somewhat easier place to live. Free men of color participated in colonial militia and served in the French and Indian War. In 1777, the North Carolina General Assembly passed a law requiring that all persons within the ages of 16 and 50 shall be liable to be drafted, and every person so drafted obliged to serve or find an able-bodied person in his room, without noting any qualifications of race or color. Nor did these men serve separately from white soldiers. Decades later, when changes in law and custom greatly restricted the rights of free people of color, pension applications noted how society had changed. In 1834, Holliday Heathcock applied for a pension for his service during the Revolutionary War and included a statement from Justice of the Peace William Bryan, noting that in the times of our Revolutionary War, free Negroes and mulattoes, an old word for people of more than one race, mustered in the ranks of white men. A 1778 list of men raised for the Granville County Militia includes descriptions of men including Jeffrey Gaines, age 20, a black man, David Hatcher, age 16 and half Indian, and Abraham Jones, 44, a mulatto. Of the almost 500 black or multiracial men who served in the Revolution from North Carolina, at least 14 of them were from Harlow. Harlow in Carteret County is in the southeastern part of the state. Free African American families from Virginia and Maryland sought new opportunities in the 1700s as land became more expensive and restrictions for free people of color increased. They moved into North Carolina, and some settled in southeastern North Carolina's swampy lowlands, which already sheltered American Indians whose original homes had been taken and their tribes decimated by colonization. The 14 men from Harlow who served in the American Revolution were Martin Black, Isaac Carter, John Carter, Joshua Carter, William Dove, John Gregory, Absalom Martin, Simeon Moore, George Perkins, Isaac Perkins, Aaron Spellman, Asa Spellman, Hezekiah Stringer, Mingo Stringer. The new SAR chapter name? The Isaac Carter Patriot Chapter, the first name for a black soldier. The chapter speaks to a recognition within the organization of how many people of differing backgrounds contributed to revolutionary efforts. Whether enslaved, free, freedom-seeking, American Indian, or multiracial, people of color faced challenging decisions regarding life and liberty during revolutionary times. Here are the captions from the photographs accompanying this article. Military records change over time. This page is from the 1778 Granville Militia Records. It was recorded by Captain Ralph Williams and was, in his words, a descriptive text. The next article is American Indians in Revolutionary Times, also written by Sally Causey Bloom. By the 1760s, American Indian people in North Carolina had responded to some 200 years of exploitation, which is the selfish or unfair use of someone or something for one's own advantage, disease, warfare, and encroachment from European settlers. Encroachment is the advancement by gradual or secretive steps into the lands of others. They were also experienced with navigating the appeals of various European powers. Their choices and actions during the revolutionary years reflect their distinct viewpoints on how to maintain homelands, access to trade, and conservation of their sense of community and tradition. Sometimes the American Revolution and the events leading up to it have been portrayed as matters concerning only white colonists in Britain, but that's not the full story. The presence and power of American Indians was integral, essential, or important to those events. Following the French and Indian War from 1754 to 1763, British officials wanted to make sure that American Indians would support them in any future conflict. On October 7, 1763, the British government announced a proclamation that created an imaginary line along the crest of the Appalachian Mountains. It declared that lands west of the line were preserved for American Indians. Britain also left about 10,000 troops in the area to maintain forts. They hoped this would deter future wars with France and Spain. The forts also served as trade centers and places for negotiation with American Indians. At the same time, the government claimed that British soldiers would protect colonists against attacks from native people. In actuality, despite common prejudicial attitudes towards American Indians at the time, the presence of British troops in forts worked to protect indigenous people from settlers. Indigenous people are the earliest known inhabitants of a specific area, who lived there long before settlers or colonists arrived. The hope was to hold back the tidal wave of settlers hunting and squatting on native lands. Squatting is settling on land that does not belong to you without right or title or payment of any kind. And also stop traders' use of alcohol and force that also led to ill will. British Major General Thomas Gage, Commander-in-Chief of the British Forces in America, wrote in December 1765 that Britain had lost our influence with the nations of Indians. British colonists and traders had cheated them through the want of a well-regulated trade and encroached upon their lands. He added that the present plan of forts, of treating the Indians, and of circumscribing the limits of the provinces was to avoid running into the same errors. To help pay for the troops and to ease the war debt, Parliament passed a number of tax laws, including the Stamp Act, which took effect in November 1765. The Stamp Act, the main trigger of colonists' resentment against Britain and Parliament, was created in part because of the recognition of American Indians' presence and right to lands. American Indian communities navigated their own internal politics, as well as entreaties from the British and Patriots, engaging in actions they believed to be in their best interests. And while American Indians participated in activities that benefited American or British interests, they did not follow direct orders from foreign powers. Some tribes and indigenous individuals identified with patriot or loyalist sentiments and acted accordingly. The Cherokee. For the Cherokee who lived in the mountains of today's North Carolina, Tennessee, and Georgia, the war was catastrophic. The Cherokee lived in villages, farmed, hunted, and traded. By the 1770s, the Cherokee had ceded lands to settlers many times, Ceded means to give up land or surrender the authority to own that land, often by treaty. With the proclamation of 1763, many Cherokee believed that they were best served by supporting the British. In the summer of 1776, the Cherokee planned attacks along the southern frontier in retaliation against settlers squatting on their lands, despite British pleas to wait. Settlers' homes and fields were burned, and about 40 people were killed. Dragging Canoe, a young Cherokee warrior, led many of these raids. He and his followers disagreed with older Cherokee leaders who had advocated waiting. Settlers in the form of American militia quickly responded. They gathered armies from Virginia, South Carolina, Georgia, and North Carolina and attacked Cherokee villages. General Griffith Rutherford led the North Carolina troops. They destroyed food supplies and crops, and that created famine for many Cherokee. In July 1777, the Cherokee signed a treaty ending the hostilities and giving up additional lands. A treaty is a binding legal agreement or contract between two nations. Americans agreed to recognize the property rights of the tribe, but not all Cherokee agreed with the treaty, and not all settlers respected it. The cycle of encroachment, violence, and broken treaties continued for years. The Catawba. The experience of the Catawba and other tribes differed from that of the Cherokee. They too experienced violence and hunger from a foreign enemy, this time from the British. The Catawba lived in the Piedmont region of North and South Carolina along the Catawba River. As settlers moved into the area, the Catawba lost lives from disease and lost land from encroachment. They survived by taking in other tribes. The Catawba had been an ally of the British during the earlier French and Indian War. In 1763, they received title to 144,000 acres of their own land in South Carolina. As surrounding neighbors became patriots, so did the Catawba, because they believed that this choice would help protect their lands. They fought in many battles in the South and also helped in the attacks on the Cherokee. In 1780, when British forces moved through the South, they burned Catawba villages and took their possessions. While grateful for their help in battle, South Carolina officials and landowners pressured the Catawba to sell their land and receive a much smaller reservation in return. North Carolina tribes. American Indian tribes and people from eastern North Carolina survived in smaller communities and also faced choices about participation in the Revolution. Some indigenous people of the tribes now known as the Lumbee, Waccamaw Siouan, Meharon, Kohari, Okanichi Band of the Saponi Nation, Haliwa Saponi, and Saponi fought with patriots alongside white men and free men of color. Others may have sided with loyalists. After the war. The end of the war did not end the pressures faced by American Indians in North Carolina and the new United States. Great Britain ceded its claim to lands east of the Mississippi River and south of the Great Lakes without consulting its indigenous allies. Many Americans felt empowered to expand the territory of the new nation by force or treaty to claim lands that were home to native peoples. American Indians, like many others, had to make hard choices in this conflict. They fought alongside their chosen allies, but for their own reasons, to protect their own people and lands. This was their war, too. There's a small sidebar. Each fall, the museum hosts the American Indian Heritage Celebration. Demonstrations, presentations, and performances highlight the traditional and contemporary artistic, historical, and cultural contributions of the American Indians in the state for more than 14,000 years. Here are the captions of the photographs accompanying the article. American Indians living in North Carolina and throughout the colonies had their own choices to make during the years leading up to the American Revolution. This beautifully illustrated 1761 document is actually a formal military commission granted by the governor of Louisiana, Louis Billoir, Chevalier de Cœur Lirec. to appoint Chief Oconostote of the Cherokee as captain in the service of the French during the French and Indian War. This 1763 map shows the division of territories as established by the Royal Proclamation, although the line is not clearly drawn. There's another sidebar article, American Indian Regalia. During colonial and revolutionary times, agents for the British government worked to build trust and influence with American Indian tribes. Agents traveled and talked with native people, listening to the concerns of tribes, while also hoping to recruit allies, regulate trade, and reinforce negotiated boundaries. John Stewart, an emigrant from Scotland to Charleston, South Carolina, was named Superintendent of Southern Indians for the British in 1762. Stewart and his agents built alliances within the Cherokee and other native peoples who supported the British. Alliances are agreements between two or more parties, used mainly in war, that mean they promise to help each other during war. Following the devastation of their villages and lands in the Cherokee War of 1776, most Cherokee chose to protect their families and communities and not join in battle during the Revolutionary War. To encourage native support of Britain, agents provided gifts to tribal communities, which included uniforms. Today, some American Indians reflect this history in their regalia. Regalia is a special clothing for special occasions, such as culturally and religiously significant items of dress that are worn by some indigenous people during traditional ceremonies, activities, and important life events. Regalia is clothing worn by native people at social occasions like a powwow. Powwows are community gatherings with music, singing, and dancing. Regalia may be designed for specific dances, to honor a native person's heritage, and to reflect that person's individual interests. American Indians do not wear regalia all the time, and they're not required to wear it. Regalia is special clothing for special occasions. And here are captions accompanying the two photographs that are in this sidebar. Jamie Oxendine, a member of the Lumbee tribe, is an artist, storyteller, musician, and author. In this image, taken at the North Carolina Museum of History's annual American Indian Heritage Celebration, he wears regalia with a red coat modeled on the uniform of the 1st Royal Regiment of the French and Indian War period. Heather Jones of the Waccamaw Siouan and Lumbee tribes is from the Buckhead community, part of Bladen and Columbus counties. She works for the Columbus County Department of Social Services. She's pictured wearing her everyday clothes and the woman's Southern traditional regalia. She notes that her regalia reflects her own color choices, vibe, and personality. Women's traditional dance includes slow and graceful movements and is one of the oldest styles of women's dance. The next article is What's in a Name? History by Jessica Pratt, who never travels without her trusty copy of the North Carolina Gazetteer, knowing that history is all around us. She coordinates the Tar Heel Junior Historian Association program as a curator of education at the North Carolina Museum of History. This map shows just some of the places in our state with names connected to the American Revolution, but there are many more. Be sure to look around your community to see if you can find a historical connection for the name of your school, street, town, or county. Explore this map and then think about these questions. What are some of the things these places or the people they were named for have in common? What else was happening in our state's history at the time these names were chosen? First, the mountains. The western town of Brevard was established as the seat of Transylvania County in the early 1860s. It was named for Ephraim Brevard, 1744 to 1781, who served as secretary of the convention that issued the Mecklenburg Resolves. During the war, Brevard served as a surgeon. He died from illnesses he contracted as a prisoner when captured by the British. Brevard Street in Charlotte is also named in his honor. Griffith Rutherford, circa 1721 to 1805, was a Revolutionary War general and politician. He had a reputation for ruthless attacks on both Loyalists and the Cherokee. In 1779, Rutherford County was formed from surrounding counties and named for him. The county seat is Rutherfordton. Ashe County sits in the opposite corner of the state from where its namesake, Samuel Ashe, 1725 to 1813, was born in Bath. Ashe was a patriot who later served as a superior court judge. The western city of Asheville and the Piedmont town of Asheboro were both named in his honor during his time as governor. Ashe County was formed and named for him in 1799, shortly after he retired. Piedmont. The city we know now as Greensboro was established around 1808 and spelled Greensboro, ending with a B-O-R-O-U-G-H. This name was selected to honor General Nathanael Greene, 1742 to 1786, who was a leader in the Battle of Guilford Courthouse 31 years earlier. The city also has a Green Street with an E on the end of Green, Cornwallis Drive, named for British General Charles Cornwallis, and Battleground Avenue. Winston-Salem was actually two separate towns of Winston and Salem until they joined in 1913. Winston was named in 1849 for Revolutionary Major Joseph Winston, 1746 to 1815. Winston led a group of volunteers at Moore's Creek Bridge in Griffith Rutherford's campaigns against the Cherokee and at the Battle of Guilford Courthouse. Winston was originally buried in a family cemetery in Germantown, but in 1906, his remains were moved to the Guilford Courthouse battlefield. Coastal Plain. Greene County was first called Glasgow County until 1799, when the Secretary of State it was named for was convicted of land fraud. The name was then changed to Greene to honor General Nathanael Greene. The city of Greenville also changed its name to honor General Greene in 1786 after originally being established in 1771 as Martinsboro for the then and last colonial governor, Josiah Martin. The spelling in 1786 was Greensville, but the S is no longer used or pronounced today. Fayetteville was first known as Campbellton or Cross Creek until a 1783 name change in honor of Frenchman the Marquis de Lafayette, 1757 to 1834. Lafayette came from France to serve the patriot cause in the Revolution. He later returned to America from France for a tour that included a visit to his North Carolina namesake city in 1825. Harnett County was carved out of Cumberland County in 1855 and named as a tribute to Cornelius Harnett, Jr., 1723 to 1781. A Wilmington area plantation owner, Harnett led resistance to the 1765 Stamp Act and was a contributing writer to the North Carolina State Constitution. After he was captured by the British in 1781, his health quickly deteriorated while imprisoned. Harnett died soon after being paroled. The North Carolina city of Washington was officially named in honor of George Washington, 1732 to 1799, in 1782, 8 years before the founding of Washington, D.C. The city of Washington serves as the county seat of Beaufort County. Washington County was formed in 1799 from Tyrrell County. And here's a British BOTUS. The city of Charlotte was named in 1768 for King George III's wife, Charlotte Sophia of Mecklenburg-Strelitz, 1744 to 1818. The county Mecklenburg was named after her home in Germany. Next, a decade of revolution. This timeline depicts some Revolutionary War events on both a big picture and North Carolina perspective. What's missing? So much. The war affected every colony and everyone. So it's by year from 1774 to 1783. We'll start with 1774, the big picture. Following the Boston Tea Party, Parliament passes intolerable acts to punish Massachusetts. In September, the First Continental Congress, with 12 of 13 colonies represented, meets in Philadelphia. British troops and American militiamen, known as Minutemen, prepare for battle. In North Carolina in August of 1774, the first provincial Congress meets in New Bern, adopts a non-importation and non-exportation agreement. Delegates are elected for the first Continental Congress. In October, 51 women from the Edenton area write and sign resolves supporting non-importation. Big picture in 1775, on April 19th, British troops and Minutemen engage at Lexington, Massachusetts. Fighting continues at Concord, Massachusetts. On May 10th, the Second Continental Congress convenes in Philadelphia. And on June 16th, George Washington accepts the nomination as Commander-in-Chief of a new Continental Army. In North Carolina, on April 8th, Royal Governor Josiah Martin dissolves the last Colonial Assembly. In May, Martin moves to Fort Johnson for safety, but Patriots burn the fort. Martin escapes to a British warship. In August, the Provincial Congress plans for governing and raising an army. And in September, a hurricane devastates much of eastern North Carolina. In 1776, the big picture, Thomas Paine's pamphlet, Common Sense, inspires many to support independence. Facing American cannons, the British evacuate Boston. On July 2nd, Congress votes for and on July 4th approves the Declaration of Independence. The American Army retreats from Manhattan. After battle, crosses New Jersey into Pennsylvania. On December 26th, Americans surprise the British at Trenton, New Jersey. In North Carolina in 1776, on February 27th, Patriots defeat Loyalists at the Battle of Moore's Creek Bridge. On April 12th, at Halifax, the Provincial Congress authorizes its delegates to the Second Continental Congress to vote for independence. Some American Indian tribes, including those now known as the Kohari, Catawba, and Lumbee, join the Patriot cause. The Cherokee support the British. Some free black men join the Patriots. Some enslaved men seek freedom and join British forces. In defending their homeland, the Cherokee attack white settlers. North Carolina militia invades Cherokee lands, destroying towns and villages. In 1777, the big picture is at Princeton, New Jersey, Americans launch a surprise attack and defeat the British. At the Battle of Brandywine in Pennsylvania, Americans retreat. British forces occupy Philadelphia. General Gates leads Americans to victory at the Battle of Saratoga, New York, and General Washington's army winters at Valley Forge, Pennsylvania into 1778. In North Carolina, many British sympathizers leave the state. Following their defeat in ongoing battles with North Carolina militia, the Cherokee give up land east of the Blue Ridge. North Carolina Continental soldiers fight at Brandywine, Pennsylvania, where Brigadier General Francis Nash is mortally wounded while leading the North Carolina Brigade, and at Germantown, Pennsylvania. And North Carolina troops winter at Valley Forge, Pennsylvania. We've run out of time for today's episode of North Carolina History. Be sure to listen next time. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Ed Tremblay, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.